Joseph had just invited his brothers through an interpreter to his house and had ordered a servant to slaughter an animal for a meal. And his brothers didn't quite, they understood part of it. They didn't understand the whole request. They heard, "Brothers, my house for a slaughter." So they're they're at Joseph's house now in verse 25, and they're a little nervous. And so they've gone to the steward of the house, and they said, "Hey, listen, there was some kind of a problem. The last time that we were here, you know, we got home and all of our money was in our sacks." And the steward of the house said, "Don't worry about it. I put it there. I knew where it was. Relax." But they're still feeling a little uneasy about this invitation to the governor's house. They still have no idea who this is. And so let's pick up the story now, chapter 43, verse 26. "And when Joseph came home, they brought him the present which was in their hand into the house, and they bowed down before him to the earth." They bring this gift that Jacob had put together with some nuts and fruits. Sounds to me like a Trader Joe. What's that gift thing?
Trader Joseph?
It could be Trader Joseph. Very good. I didn't even think about that. Wow, you've had way too much caffeine today, but we're glad for it. That nut quartet thing that I love so much, but I don't eat that stuff anymore. Exactly. But that's what it sounds like. They put together this little nut quartet of pomegranates and fruits and nuts. And so the boys come and they present this now to the governor, which is Joseph. And then he asked them about their well-being and said, "Is your father well, the old man of whom you spoke? Is he still alive?" And they answered, "Your servant, our father, is in good health. He is still alive." And they bowed their heads down and prostrated themselves. And you know, Joseph must be watching this 10 brothers of his. And how could he not remember that day in the field when he said to them, "And then I dreamed another dream where you bowed down to me." And they said, "Oh, master of dreamers, will we bow down to you?" And even, you remember, even Jacob had chastised him. "Will I and your mother and your brothers bow down to you?" And yet Jacob pondered these things, it said. And he continues to ponder these things to this day. And so they're bowing down. Now they're prostrating themselves. They know they're behind the eight ball. It looks like, smells like, tastes like, sounds like they ripped this guy off. So here now they're before him again, the governor. Not the king of Egypt, but his number two man, the governor. And so now they're maybe looking at each other and they're thinking, you know, that first bow wasn't quite low enough. Now they're on the floor. 10 of them, like sheaves, bowed down on the ground. Verse 29, "Then he lifted his eyes and he saw his brother Benjamin." They've returned now with Benjamin, his mother's son. And he said, "Is this your younger brother of whom you spoke to me?" And he said, "God be gracious to you, my son." Now Joseph makes a tactical error here, doesn't he? Because he never gives his 10 brothers the opportunity to answer. So he reveals a little bit to them that he knows who this strange man is. "Is this your younger brother? God bless you, my son." Rather than, "Is this your younger brother?" "No, this is one of the hired servants. Our younger brother's running a little bit late. You know, his camel threw a shoe and, you know, he's at Beersheba getting a..." He stopped at Baker's for a malt. No, he doesn't even give him an opportunity. He just assumes. He knows, in other words. And then he speaks to Benjamin very differently than he has spoken to his brothers. Remember, speaking to the 10 brothers, he was very rough with them. Accused them of being spies. "You've come here to spy out the nakedness of the land." And then they go into this long explanation. And he says, now I know you're spies, but not so. And so another little tactical error in his attempt to keep his identity hidden. He knows who he's talking to. In verse 30, now his heart yearned for his brother. And so Joseph made haste, and he sought somewhere to weep. And he went into his chamber, and he wept there. You know what I love about this verse? This shows me that through the years of betrayal and through the years of pain, through the years of false accusations, through the years of false imprisonment, Joseph has not allowed himself to become numb. Do you know anybody that's allowed themselves to become numb? I have a friend who was just raised in a really painful family. He's the oldest son of many sons. And when his father left his family, he was left to play that role. And his mother put him into that role. It's called role model incest. So it's a horrible thing to do to a young man. And in the process of dealing with this, my friend allowed himself to become numb. In other words, you could go to him and say, hey, your house is on fire. All right? I'll call the fire department right away. You know, no emotion. Not positive, not negative. Hey, you just won the lottery! I should probably look into some wise financial advice. And now God has saved him and redeemed his life. And I stopped by his house Saturday just to say hi to him. And you know what? It's still a part of his life, that numbness. I preached his dad's funeral here recently. And several of the kids at the funeral were crying. But my pal sat in the front row, you know. And he took vows during his childhood. I'll never let somebody hurt me again. I will never. And the bad thing about these vows, folks, is that we tend to keep them once we take them. You know, if you've had a bad relationship, then you say, I will never let somebody get that close to me again. And then God brings you somebody, and you end up in the counselor's office, and the spouse is saying, I feel a stiff arm away from him all the time. Why? Because you're living out that vow. And Joseph didn't do that. He didn't take defensive vows, nor did he take offensive vows. I would have. I would have taken this vow. If I ever see those 10 knuckleheads again, I will, without hesitation, make them pay. He didn't take that vow. Nor did he take the vow, I'm going to toughen up here in prison. I'm going to grow skin so thick a knife can't penetrate me, and I will never let anybody hurt me again. Because had he taken that vow, he could have sat in the presence of Benjamin and said, you're the new kid, huh? This your younger brother? Must have been tough for him. He didn't do that. His bowels yearned for his brother. He literally had to excuse himself, get into another room, and like the picture of Christ, he wept. And how can you read this account of Joseph and not think of John 11:35, the first verse we all memorized in Sunday school? Jesus wept. It's amazing, isn't it? Yes? But of course.
Did he know Benjamin? Did they meet before?
No.
He never knew Benjamin?
No.
Okay.
Benjamin was born. Great question. Benjamin was born after he was gone. And it answers the question, why was Joseph so interested in the family when the boys first came? He forced them to tell about the family. And we know this because when they went back to Jacob and Jacob says, hey, we're out of grain. You got to go buy some more grain. They said, no. We can't go back without Benjamin. The man was clear, don't come back unless you bring your younger brother. In the meantime, who was left behind in prison? Simeon. Simeon was. Why do you suppose Joseph chose Simeon of the ten to stay behind? Probably something he heard from the pit.
Was Simeon the one that said,
we can only
be easy with him?
No, that was Reuben.
Oh.
Reuben and Judah were the two of the brothers that stood up somewhat for Joseph. Simeon?
He was a cruel one, right?
Very cruel. And in chapter 49, you've been reading ahead. In chapter 49, Jacob will say to you, cursed be your cruelty. And so Joseph probably heard in that whole kidnap scenario, he probably heard who the ringleader was. I'd be willing to bet it was Simeon. Simeon gets left behind. And now I just love that Joseph's heart is so soft for his brothers that he has to go and have a cry. I just think that's amazing. It tells me something about his attitude during the trials that he walked in. Ah, I want to walk through my trials with a soft heart and not saying, you know, I'm never going to take this chance again. I'm never going to let myself have this opportunity again because look how painful it's been. Oh, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. Thank God that Paul said, oh, the door's closed. I'm never going to knock on a door again. Door closed. Next door closed. Next door closed. Next door revival. That's what Joseph's heart was like. And so he has to go and have a cry. And then in verse 31, then he washed his face and came out, and he restrained himself and he said, serve the bread. Now this is interesting. He comes out now, and you know what's interesting is that he worked a righteous work day, even though he had 10 dinner guests. He was a worker. So he comes home for dinner now, has this conversation, and then he says, serve the bread. But now look how the bread is served. This is very interesting. So they set him a place by himself. Why? Because of his position, his table was on a platform. So if this is the eating area, we'll say that you're his brothers. You're down on the floor. Joseph's table is alone on a raised platform. And then over here are the Egyptians. Well, why three tables? Well, let's read and find out. And so they set him a place by himself and them by themselves and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat food with the Hebrews, for that is an abomination to the Egyptians. Well, guess what? It's also an abomination to the Hebrews. So neither of these two groups can eat the same food. Why? Because the Hebrews are over here chewing on animals that the Egyptians worship. You know, it'd be like going to a Hindu community and saying, hey, would you like a Big Mac? Well, no. You wouldn't do that. And so the three tables. And they set before him the firstborn, according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth. And so there's 11 chairs. Simeon's been restored to them now. There's 11 chairs at the table. And Joseph says, you sit here, Reuben, and Benjamin, you sit here. And then bam, 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 I don't have them memorized. Sits them all according to their age. And the men look at each other. And they think, he's a magician. Hello. That's what they thought. Man, this guy's magic. He can divine. And Joseph's even going to mock him here a little bit. And the men looked in astonishment at one another. Isn't it so funny that that the one of the chapters started with Jacob saying to the brothers, chapter 42, why do you look at one another? Well, here they are again looking at one another. They're looking at each other thinking, what is going on? Probably in chapter 42, out of guilt, now just because they're knuckleheads. Verse 34, then he took servings to them from before him, but Benjamin's serving was five times as much as any of theirs. And so they drank and were merry with him. He's giving them another hint, isn't he? And think about poor Benjamin. Poor Benjamin's just come through a famine. And now he shows up and he doesn't get half a Big Mac. He doesn't get a full Big Mac. He gets five Big Macs. And he's looking at his plate and he's thinking, right on! And Reuben's looking down the table like, well, that little punk. I wonder if he's going to like kick back some of those Big Macs to his big brother. You know, here I brought them safely all the way down here. And Joseph has learned this favoritism from whom? From his dad. He surely has. And he hasn't forgotten that message or hasn't forgotten that lesson of favoritism. But now we're going to see in verse 44. In chapter 44, that Joseph has a little test up his sleeves for his brothers. And he commanded the steward of his house, saying, fill the men's sacks with food as much as they can carry, and put each man's money in the mouth of his sack. Also, put my cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest, and his grain money. And so he did according to the word that Joseph had spoken. So Joseph has this cup, no doubt a gift from whom? The Pharaoh. Yeah, without doubt. And now this isn't one of those mugs from Things Remembered at the mall, you know? That's not what we're talking about. No plastic on this cup. This thing is probably jeweled, turned, milled. It's totally custom, probably worth a fortune. Probably thought by the Egyptians to actually have magical powers as a part of the cup. And no doubt, Joseph saw the brothers eyeing the cup, you know. Whoa, check it out. Look at that cup. And so Joseph says, take the cup, by the way. You know what cup? And they're all, you know, the cup. The cup, not a cup, the cup. And put it in the sack of the youngest and his grain money. And so he did according to the word that Joseph had spoken. As soon as the morning dawned, the men were sent away, they and their donkeys. And when they had gone out of the city and were not yet far off, Joseph said to his steward, now, get up and follow. And when you have overtaken them, say to them, why have you repaid evil for good? Is not this the one from which my Lord drinks, and with which he indeed practices divination? You have done evil in so doing. And so, verse 6, he overtook them. And he spoke to them these same words. Now, get the picture. Joseph's watching the last of the camels pull out. And they just clear the welcome to Egypt sign. And Joseph says, now go after him. This is what I want you to say. And so they go. And they stop the 11 brothers. And check out the response here of the brothers. And they said to him, why does my Lord say these words? Far be it from us that your servants should do such a thing. Look, we brought back to you from the land of Canaan the money which we found in the mouth of our sacks. How then could we steal silver or gold from your Lord's house? Hey, do you know who you're talking to? That's what they're saying. Do you know who you're talking to? You're talking to the sons of Jacob here. We would never pull a shenanigan on the governor of Egypt. How could he even begin to think these things? Pretty easily. You know, all things taken into consideration. with whomever of your servants it is found, let him die. And we also will be my Lord's slaves. And he said, now also let it be according to your words. He with whom it is found shall be my slave, and you shall be blameless. Then each man speedily let down his sack to the ground, and each opened his sack. So he searched. He began with the oldest. So he begins with who? Reuben. Doesn't find the cup. Finds the money. Doesn't find the cup. Goes down through the 11 brothers. He gets to Benjamin. And the cup was found in Benjamin's sack, verse 12. And then they tore their clothes, and each man loaded his donkey and returned to the city. Now look who takes the lead here in verse 14. So Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, and he was still there. Yeah, he was still there. He was waiting for him. This whole thing was his plan. Of course he was still there. And they fell before him on the ground, and Joseph said to them, what deed is this you have done? Did you not know that such a man as I can certainly practice divination? So now he's just playing with them. He is. You know, he's not being cruel. He's not torturing them. He's not imprisoning them. He's not selling them into slavery, but he's messing with them. Why? Because he's testing them is what he's doing. Then Judah said, verse 16, what shall we say to my Lord? And what shall we speak? Or how shall we clear ourselves? God has found out the iniquity of your servants. And here we are, my Lord's slaves, both we and he also with whom the cup was found. But he said, far be it from me that I should do so. The man in whose hand the cup was found, he shall be my slave. And as for you, go up in peace to your father. So Judah steps up, becomes the spokesman, and says, you got us dead to rights. What can we say? We're guilty. What doesn't he do? What he doesn't do is say to the governor of Egypt, you know what? This really isn't even our real brother. This Benjamin kid, he's our half-brother. He's always had a problem. You know, he's a troubled child. You know, he's A-D-H-R-L-M-N-A. He's, you know, he's got some of these problems and... you know, he's troubled. So I'll tell you what, keep him. Joseph is just waiting for the brothers to sell out the other son of Rachel. That's what he's halfway expecting. And they don't do that. And I'm telling you, it goes a long way in not doing that. But Judah's not done. Then Judah came near to him and said, oh, my Lord, please let your servant speak a word in my Lord's hearing, and do not let your anger burn against your servant, for you are even like Pharaoh. My Lord asked his servant, saying, have you a father or a brother? And we said to my Lord, we have a father, an old man, and a child of his old age, that would be Benjamin, who is young. His brother is dead, and truly as far as Judah knew, Joseph is dead. And he alone is left of his mother's children, and his father loves him. And then you said to your servants, bring him down to me, that I may set my eyes on him. And we said to my Lord, the Lord cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father would die. But you said to your servants, unless your youngest brother comes down with you, you shall not see my face no more. So it was, when we went up to your servant, my father, that we told him the words of my Lord. And our father said, go back and buy us a little food. But we said, we cannot go down if our youngest brother is with us. Then we will go down. For we may not see the man's face unless our younger brother is with us. And then your servant, my father, said to us, you know that my wife bore me two sons. In other words, you know that the wife that I loved bore me two sons. It's no secret. Had Jacob held this back from anybody? No. He loved Rachel. He got tricked into marrying the rest of the wives, basically. And Rachel gave him but two sons. Verse 28. And the one went out from me. And I said, surely he is torn to pieces, and I have not seen him since. Well, how could he see him since? So, there's still, in Jacob's mind, there's still that gnawing thing. What was it he said? His brothers were going to bow down to him. How could that be the case if he was torn to pieces? I don't get it. But, verse 29, but if you take this one also from me, and calamity befalls him, you shall bring down my gray hair with sorrow to the grave. In other words, look, I sent Joseph out with you once, and I've never seen him since. If I let Benjamin go with you, and something happens to Benjamin, I can't take it. I'll die. Verse 30, now therefore, when I come to your servant, my father, and the lad is not with us, since his life is bound up in the lad's life, it will happen when he sees that the lad is not with us that he will die. And so your servants will bring down the gray hair of your servant, our father, with sorrow to the grave. For your servant became surety for the lad to my father, saying, if I do not bring him back to you, then I shall bear the blame before my father forever. My goodness, what a different story than back when they were so willing to sell Joseph for profit into slavery. And now Judah has approached the governor of Egypt. And that wasn't a very wise thing to do, because he was like Pharaoh. And he says, I know you're like Pharaoh. You could thumbs down me and my head's going to roll. But I have to risk my life to tell you something. If we do what you're asking me to do, it'll kill my father. And I cannot let that happen. My goodness. Verse 33. Now therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the lad as a slave to my Lord, and let the lad go up with his brothers. Totally different story. Don't take Benjamin into slavery. Take me. Let him go home to my father. You know, I'm wiser, I'm stronger, I'm a better slave than he. Take me. Let him go. For how shall I go up to my father if the lad is not with me, lest perhaps I see the evil that would come upon my father? And the brothers pass the test. They pass the test. And Joseph is so moved by this that, well, look in chapter 45. Then Joseph could not restrain himself before all those who stood by him. And he cried out, make everyone go out from me. So here, think about poor Judah. You know, he's come up now. He's close to Joseph. And through an interpreter, he's telling the story. And he gets done with his story. And he's waiting for a response. And what is the response? In a foreign language. And Judah's probably thinking, I'm gone. I'm done. He's yelling. He's upset. I don't know what he's saying, but I'm a dead man. That's probably what he's saying. But what he's saying is, make everyone go out from me. So no one stood with him while Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh heard it. How do you suppose they heard it? They were doing a Sarah. Exactly. They were at the keyhole. Why? Because it's the governor. And he's in there with a bunch of spies. He told us they were spies. So they're listening in. And the Egyptians and the whole house of Pharaoh heard it. Then Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Does my father still live? But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed in his presence. For once, these 10 schemers and Benjamin are speechless. They cannot believe their ears. They're dumbfounded. They're taken back. Perhaps they're unconscious. That's what they were doing. And Joseph said to his brothers, "Please come near to me." And so they came near. And then he said, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt." Listen to this. Listen to the kindness in these words. "But now do not therefore be grieved." What does that tell you? They were grieved. They're hearing this and they're thinking, "Ugh. Oh." Their faces just must have been faces that said, "Oh no. All this time, it was Joseph. All of those dreams. All those things we said above the cistern. Oh no." And Joseph says to him, "Don't be grieved. Don't be angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you who sent me here, but God, and He has made me a father to Pharaoh, and Lord to all of his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt." That is a man with a soft heart to say to these brothers, don't be grieved. Don't be angry with yourself. Self-anger is the definition of depression. That's what depression is. It's self-anger. And before him, his brothers, their countenance must have just melted. And he tells them, don't be angry with yourselves. Because what you meant for evil, God meant for good. And look, we're 2 years into a famine. For 5 more years, there's going to be no more new food. And look, guys, check this out. Check how much grain I got. It's still uncountable. God sent me here to save your lives, to be a blessing to you. Do you see the obvious analogy that God sent His Son to save us? He sent His Son ahead into a world full of sin, where He was rejected, betrayed, sold for 20 pieces of change, enslaved, murdered, to save us. And then Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." And here's Joseph forgiving his brothers. And he's saying, you didn't know what you were doing, but God did. Wow. I want to live next door to Joseph in heaven. Just so in hopes some of him will rub off on me. I want to have this man's heart. So now in verse number 9, he tells him, "Hurry up and go to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down to me and do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near to me, you and your children, your children's children, your flocks and your herds and all that you have. And there I will provide for you, lest you and your household and all that you have come to poverty. For there are still 5 years of famine. And behold, your eyes and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it is my mouth that speaks to you. And so shall you tell my father of all my glory in Egypt and of all that you have seen. And you shall not, and you shall hurry and bring my father down here.' And then he fell on his brother Benjamin's neck and he wept. And Benjamin wept on his neck." This is probably a moment where Joseph is acknowledging to Benjamin, "Bro, I can only imagine what you've been through." And truly they connect. Because Benjamin undoubtedly had suffered the same way with these 10 knucklehead brothers that Joseph had. Verse 15, moreover, he kissed all of his brothers, and he wept over them. And after that, his brothers talked with him. And now the report of it was heard in Pharaoh's house, saying, Joseph's brothers have come. And so it pleased Pharaoh and his servants well. Why? Why would the news of Joseph's brothers arriving please the Pharaoh? Think about it. He's the king of Egypt. And now he's being told, hey, Joseph's getting ready to move his 11 brothers and his father and all the wives and all the kids down here. And it pleased the Pharaoh, the Bible says. Well, why is that? A couple of reasons. One is, what had the Pharaoh noticed about everything that Joseph put his hand to? Cha-ching! Yeah. Remember Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. I will bless them who bless you. I will curse them who curse you. And so the Pharaoh's a businessman. And he realizes, hey, I'm bucks up because of one of this man's sons. He's got 11 more. I'll take them. You bring them all down here. But there's another reason. The Pharaoh, though he's the king of Egypt, he's not Egyptian. He is a Hyksos king. He's from the line of Seth. He's closer to being Hebrew than he is to being Egyptian. The Hyksos kings, if you haven't done this, and you probably haven't, but go on the internet and just do a search on Hyksos. Oh, you will learn so much about the Hyksos kings. H-Y-K-S-O-S. The Hyksos kings. There was a whole line of them. They started about the 12th dynasty. And were still in existence almost until the time of the birth of Christ. They were called, their nickname was, the Shepherd Kings. Now, why is that interesting? Because the occupation of being a shepherd was looked upon very lowly in Egypt. And yet, here's a king, the king of Egypt, and what does he know? He knows shepherding. He knows how to shepherd sheep. And in fact, he knows the best part of Egypt for grazing sheep. Where do you suppose it is? Goshen. Very good, Bob. Goshen. And that's why the Pharaoh picks this out. He and Joseph has this scheme. Okay, you bring your whole family of shepherds down. Oh, I'm getting ahead of myself. But this is why. This is the shepherd king of Egypt. Isn't God good? Isn't God good? I mean, that's amazing. That would be like you getting locked up and your jailer's a Yankees fan. Yeah, when is that going to happen?
Never, I hope.
Yeah, exactly. I know, because most of the jailers here locally are Dodgers fans. But, you know, but of course. Where in the world was I? And so it pleased Pharaoh, verse 16. And verse 17, and Pharaoh said to Joseph, say to your brothers, do this, load your animals and depart. And go to the land of Canaan, bring your father and your households and come to me, and I will give you the best of the land of Egypt. What is he saying? I will give you the best pastures in all of Egypt. I know where they are, man. I'm the shepherd king. Bring them down here. Oh, I got pastures. I've been looking at these pastures. The shepherd king. And you will eat the fat of the land. Now you are commanded, do this. Take carts. Take carts. This is interesting. Why? Because the Egyptians were so far ahead technologically of the children of Israel. The children of Israel hadn't even started using the wheel yet. The Egyptians are fighting with the wheel. In fact, we'll read a couple of places. Then Joseph went up. Where'd he go up? That's the terminology to go up into a chariot. Remember he talked about that he would ride behind Pharaoh in the second what? Chariot. The Egyptians are using the wheel. And so Pharaoh says, hey, I tell you what, take some of these new carts up there and show them off to your pop. Take a bunch of wagons up there, load up his kids, load up his stuff, and wheel him on back down. He's old. There's no way that Jacob's going to walk the 270 miles to this place. He's going to ride. Cadillac ride. So Pharaoh says, take the carts. Take the car, son. Here's the keys. Go get your little ones and your wives and bring your father and come. Verse 20. Also, do not be concerned about your goods, for the best of all of the land of Egypt is yours. Wow. This is amazing. Can this story get any better? Yes. But the Pharaoh says, I command you, do this. Go get your family. Bring him back, Joseph. I'm so glad that you're being restored to your family. And then the sons of Israel did so. And Joseph gave them carts according to the command of the Pharaoh. And he gave them provisions for the journey. He gave to all of them, to each man, changes of garments. But to Benjamin, he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of garments. He takes Benjamin down to Nordstrom. He sets him up big time. And he sends him home. And he sent to his father these things, 10 donkeys loaded with the good things of Egypt, and 10 female donkeys loaded with grain, bread, and food for his father for the journey. And so he sent his brothers away, and they departed. And he said to them, see that you do not become troubled along the way. Why do you think he said that? Pulls him up close and says, and brothers, no shenanigans on the way. I'm watching you. All right? I know how long this trip is going to take. Be back on time. See that no troubles befall you. Perhaps he was looking at Benjamin while he's saying this. And guys, you're counted. See that nothing happens along the way. And then they went up out of Egypt, verse 25, and they came to the land of Canaan, to Jacob their father. And they told him, saying, Joseph is still alive, and he is the governor over all the land of Egypt. And Jacob promptly has a cardiac arrest. And down he goes. His heart fails him. And the poor brothers, what do you think they're thinking? Oh no! Oh no! We've killed him! And Joseph just told us, make sure you have no problems along the way. No, look, we killed Dad! But in verse 27, but when they told him all the words which Joseph had said to them, and when he saw the carts which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob, their father, revived. Cha-ching! Probably with dollar signs in his eyes, but what is it that revived him? He looks out the window, and what's he see? Read it again. And when he saw the carts which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob their father revived. So who knows? That's probably not...
Cadillac.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the big one, Elizabeth. We got a Cadillac. I'm better. All right, so now, let's get packing. Then Israel said, it is enough. The word enough means multiplied by tens of thousands. He says to them, my blessings are tens of thousands. Man, I was raised by a mom who probably daily I got to listen to my mom saying, count your blessings. That's how my mom raised us. boys, count your blessings. And then she would count, start singing, count your blessings, name them one by one. We don't sing that anymore, but that's a good old song. Count your blessings, see what God hath done. Count your blessings, name them one by one. Count your many blessings, see what God has done. And that's what Jacob is doing here. He's counting his blessings. And he said, it is tens of thousands of blessings. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die. And so Israel took his journey with all that he had. Now, did you hear what he got called just now?
Israel.
Why? Why do you suppose he got called Israel there? Because of where he's going. And so Israel took his journey with all that he had, and he came to Beersheba. Do you remember Beersheba? Beersheba means well of an oath. And who in Genesis, who else had visited Beersheba? Abraham and Isaac, and now Jacob once again goes to the well of an oath. Why? To worship the Lord. To remind the Lord that we remember the oath. Beloved, when we pass out the bread and the juice and we take communion, what are we doing? We're reminding the Lord that we remember. We do this in memory. Do it until I come, Jesus says. And so Israel loads up. He doesn't head right to Joseph. He heads right to Beersheba. And he offered sacrifices to the God of his father, Isaac. And then God spoke to Israel in the visions of the night. What a blessing. I told you the story could get better. God's going to visit Jacob again. Never listed, never recorded that God visited Joseph. But he visited Abraham, he visited Isaac, and now here again, he visits Jacob. And he says, Jacob, Jacob. And Jacob said, here I am. And so he said, I am God, the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt, for I will make of you a great nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again. And Joseph will put his hand on your eyes. What does that mean? In death, it will be Joseph who closes his eyes. Now, to you and I, that might sound morbid. But to Jacob, this is music to his ears. This is all he's ever wanted. It's all he's dreamt about all of these years. And now God is saying, I promise you, do this, don't be fearful, go, and it will be your son Joseph who will close your eyes. In other words, you'll die in Joseph's arms. Ah, what a blessing.
How old is
Jacob at this point? Jacob is, you know, I don't know for sure.
Okay.
Way old.
Yeah.
The sons are all up there, right? Sons, well, Judah's a grandfather, so.
Did you say how old is Jacob?
Yeah.
I think we read, right, I saw 127. Remember, he came into Pharaoh's presence. Oh, that's, we're going to come to that.
Oh, you've been reading ahead.
I'm sorry.
Good for you. That's all right.
Yeah,
and Bob's just firing off the answers back there, too.
About 127.
Right on. Verse 5. Sounding younger by the decade, is it? Then Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father Jacob, their little ones, and their wives in the cart which Pharaoh had sent to carry him. And so they took their livestock and their goods which they had acquired in the land of Canaan and went to Egypt, Jacob and all his descendants with him, his sons and his sons' sons, his daughters and his sons' daughters, and all his descendants he brought with him to Egypt. Now these were the names of the children of Israel. Jacob and his sons who went to Egypt. Reuben was Jacob's firstborn. The sons of Reuben were Hanok, Palu, Hezron, and Carmi. The sons of Simeon were Jemuel, Jamin, Ohad, Jachin, Zoar, Shaul, and the son and Shaul, the son of a Canaanite woman. The sons of Levi were Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. The sons of Judah were Onan, Shelah, Perez, and Zerah. Boy, we know way too much about that family, don't we? Okay. But and Onan died in the land of Canaan in chapter 38. Get the tape. We're not going over it. The sons of Perez were Hezron and Hamul. The sons of Issachar were Tola, Puvah, Job, and Shimron. The sons of Zebulun were Sered, Elon, and Jalil. These were the sons of Leah, whom she bore to Jacob in Paddan Aram, with his daughter Dinah. All the persons, his sons and his daughters, were 33. The sons of Gad were Ziphion, Haggai, Shunai, Esbon, Eri, Arodi, Areli. The sons of Asher were Jimnah, Ishua, Isua, Beriah, Sarah, their sister. And the sons of Beriah were Heber and Malchiel. These were the sons of Zilpah, whom Laban gave to Leah, his daughter, and these she bore to Jacob, 16 persons. The sons of Rachel, Jacob's wife, were Joseph and Benjamin. And to Joseph in the land of Egypt were born Manasseh, Ephraim, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore to him. And she was the wife, if you remember, that Pharaoh gave to Joseph after he interpreted the dreams. Gave him the promotion, and he also gave him a wife. The sons of Benjamin were Bela, Becher, Ashbel, Gera, Naaman, Ehi, Rosh, Muppim, Huppim, and Ard. Yes. That must have been entertaining around supper time. These were the sons of Rachel who were born to Jacob, 14 persons in all. The son of Dan was Hushin. The sons of Naphtali were Jaziel, Gunai, Jazer, and Shelem. And these were the sons of Bilhah, whom Laban gave to Rachel his daughter, and she bore these to Jacob, 7 persons in all. And all the persons who went with Jacob to Egypt, who came from his body, besides Jacob's sons' wives, were 66 persons in all. So it's a virtual parade coming down to Egypt. And Pharaoh is just tickled pink. He just can't wait to see some good shepherding going on. And the sons of Joseph who were born to him in Egypt were 2 persons. And all the persons of the house of Jacob who went to Egypt were 70. And then he sent Judah before him to Joseph. Again, Judah taking the role here. And remember, it's through Judah who will come the line of Christ. So Judah's taking the role more and more. Then he sent Judah before him to Joseph to point out before him the way to Goshen. And they came to the land of Goshen. And so Joseph made ready his chariot, and he went up to Goshen to meet his father Israel. And he presented himself to him, and he fell on his neck, and he wept on his neck a good while. And Israel said to Joseph, "Now let me die, since I have seen your face, because you are still alive." In other words, Jacob says, "I have it all now. I'm a happy man. I can die now." Sounds like Simeon in the temple when they brought baby Jesus in. He took a look at Messiah and said, "Now, Lord, let me die." So many parallels. It's amazing. Verse 31. Then Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, "I will go up and tell Pharaoh and say to him, 'My brothers and those of my father's house who were in the land of Canaan have come to me. And the men are shepherds, for their occupation has been to feed livestock, and they have brought their flocks, their herds, and all that they have. And so shall it be,'" not, "and so I highly suggest," or you might want to, "so shall it be when Pharaoh calls you and says, 'What is your occupation?' that you shall say, 'Your servant's occupation has been with livestock, and from our youth, even till now, both we and also our fathers, that you may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians.'" Why do you suppose Joseph is so adamant with his brothers here? No shenanigans. "So shall you say to Pharaoh When asked, what is your occupation? Tell them that you're a shepherd. Mm-hmm. And now they've spent enough time in Egypt to know that this is a little bit like saying, you know, what do you do for a living? Oh, well, yeah, you know, I'm a multi-level marketing person. Or I'm a telemarketer. Or, you know, I'm a donor for the flu, you know. They know that this is not an occupation that's looked highly upon, and they might be tempted to say, well, you know, actually, we're businessmen. Mm-mm. Tell them what you are, because the occupation is not looked highly upon, and when you're taken to Goshen and left there, you'll be left alone. That's what he's saying without saying it. It's God's plan to keep, even at this point, to keep the children of Israel from marrying the Canaanites. And so in Goshen, they'll have this little bit of privacy. Well, friends, we have left 47, 48, 49, and chapter 50. We're going to do it the next time we meet together, and then we'll have Genesis in the bag.